WPFK, 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 FM Santa Barbara, and on the World Wide Web at kpfk.org.
My town, lady bright, in the arms of night.
Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, don't give up the fight.
Preacher man, don't tell me heaven is under the earth.
Stand up for your right.
Well, thank you, my friend. Thank you. All right, this is the Lawyers Guild Show. I'm Jim Lafferty, along with my co-host, Maria Hall. Good afternoon, Maria.
Good afternoon, Jim.
How you doing?
I'm doing just fine. How are you?
Well, you're the one mainly responsible for putting together today's show, so why don't you let our listeners know what they're in for if they stay tuned, and I hope and trust they will.
Yes, and we are very excited. It's also KPFK's fun drive time, and we are going to talk about that a little later too, but summer fun drive, you've got to support our independent radio. But let me jump right into our first, and actually our first, the full hour segment. So yep. I'm really excited about this. We're going to be talking about the Boyle Heights fire from last month. And even though it's not in the headlines every day anymore, there is plenty more going on behind the scenes. So, Jim, did you want me to jump right in?
Yes, I do. I do want you to jump right in. It is a fun drive time, but we don't do what we used to do. Take, 20 minutes of every hour pitching for funds. We take a few minutes. We scatter it through the show. So that way people don't get bored and we don't lose our real purpose, which is, of course, to bring you these important topics in our governance today. So let's jump right into it.
All right, will do. Okay, well, last month, as I said, a fire broke out in Boyle Heights, sending toxic black fumes across Los Angeles for more than a week. I think all of us saw that if you were on any freeway in the region. The site was a massive cold storage warehouse operated by a company called Lineage. Today, nearly 6 weeks later, the crisis for residents has not ended. Still suffering from the after effects of breathing in that toxic smoke, they have also filed more than 900 complaints about the stench that's emanating. It's estimated at 85 million pounds of food waste rotting inside the building. Nice. And we have two great guests on this subject today. First, we have Alma Marquez, a longtime Los Angeles community organizer and political strategist who's leading the Protect LA Now campaign in response to the fire. Alma has spent nearly two decades organizing across California. She co-founded the Los Angeles Parents Union, led Latino voter engagement for the 2008 Obama campaign, and now runs Del Sol Group, a public affairs and strategy firm. And then also with us is Christy Hernandez, an LA native with over 20 years of cross-sector experience in government affairs, public affairs, and community relations. She also leads the Maravilla Advisory Committee. Sorry, Christy, you can correct me. The advisory committee in Maravilla, which is an unincorporated area of East Los Angeles, and they represent the residents and stakeholders and make sure that their voices are also heard. So Alma Marquez and Christy Hernandez, welcome to the Lawyers Guild Show.
Thank you so much. We're so excited to be here today, Maria. Thank you both, Maria and Jim, for the opportunity to chat.
Wonderful. Well, just to to get us started, before we get into details, can you remind listeners and maybe enlighten them if they didn't already know, in broad strokes, when did the fire break out? How long did it last? And why was it particularly dangerous and so hard to put out?
For sure. So today is day 35 of the fire, date of ignition. And I'll share with you, the building itself is in the city of LA in the Boyle Heights community. It sits literally across the street from unincorporated East LA. And, you know, what we've experienced to date is a lot of political hot potato, I think is the best way to describe it, where you have this cross jurisdictional challenge of county versus city of LA. Because it's in the city of LA, the mayor of LA and the local city councilwoman have taken the lead. But the impact is felt not just across the street in East LA, which obviously it's been a significant impact to unincorporated East LA. And Christy is a very important leader in the unincorporated East LA area. And I'm really glad that she was able to join us today, because she has a lot of experience in that community and has been a longtime advocate for effective representation, any representation for the region. And so in addition to unincorporated East LA, there's also the dynamics around the other cities, including the city that I live in, which is Monterey Park. And Monterey Park is, our city sits in the plume path of the fire. And so the fire itself started on Wednesday, June 17th. It was essentially very unexpected for those of us who experienced it. We were told to shelter in place, which we did. And unbeknownst to us, we were sheltering under a toxic fumes and exposing ourselves, our homes, our bodies to toxic and chemical waste. And it's been terrible. I look exhausted because I am exhausted. We have been trying to get the conversation around the plume path to reach critical mass, and even just getting something basic, like getting the elected officials or the government officials who are appointed to actually describe it as a toxic or chemical fire has been nearly impossible. They will not admit the truth. And it just is really problematic on many, many levels.
Well, I'm wondering what caused the fire to break out in the first place? Has there been a finding of that? Is it a finding that's agreed to? What caused it, allowed it to happen and become such a terrible fire?
Yeah. Christy, do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, I'll jump in. From our understanding, there is essentially a farm of solar panels on the roof of the lineage, which is 500,000 square feet and housed 85 million pounds of food. Wow. And so our understanding is that the Altus, the power solar power company, had a third party come in to do a repair. And while they were repairing a solar panel, this fire was ignited. And they tried to put it out. I think initially it was successful, but then it ignited again. And if you see an image, the roof is literally covered in these solar panels. And so the fire department was very careful about how to pursue in putting out this fire, given the fact that we're talking about solar panels. We learned that there might be, there's ammonia, a pipeline of ammonia on this roof. And so they had to, again, be very cautious. I do also want to remind folks that because there were so many solar panels and because they had to take the, very cautious, the fire burned for 8 days. And so to Alma's point, I mean, you just had this plume path. And I want to, again, just underscore that Lineage is literally located in Boyle Heights in the city of Los Angeles, but it's on the borderline of East LA. So you cross the street, you're unincorporated East Los Angeles, you cross back, you're in Boyle Heights. And I also want to paint a picture for you, because these homes are literally across the street from essentially a five-story building with no windows. It's just a large warehouse. And it's, you know, you can see the homes. You look up and you just see a big wall in the front of you. So when we talk about all these things that are happening, from the smoke to, you know, putting out the extinguishing the fire to currently the rotten food, I mean, folks have a front row seat if you're a resident in those homes directly across the street.
Well, I'd love to hear more about that, about what life, the daily life has been like in Boyle Heights and also the surrounding communities, because as we know, air doesn't have, you know, smoke doesn't have these geographic boundaries. It goes all over. Yeah. And I have to think we were all in danger, you know, everyone in the region. So, but what has life been like for those who were closest to the fire? The smell, the flies, the health complaints, all of that. And are people okay yet?
So I think it's been hell. It's been a living hell for the people, what we're calling the people at Ground Zero, on many levels. One is, you know, this is a working class, majority Latino community. They are hardworking people. They keep to themselves. They're raising their families. They're living where they can afford to live. And the majority of the people there are renters. There's a lot of the folks there have lived there for many years and have experienced the environmental racism that we know as a result of the Eggside battery plant disaster that's happened there. Many of them have been sick because of that. Many of them have lost families to cancer. This is one of these zones of intense, it's actually, it's one of the intense zones of health, public health challenges for a community. The plant itself sits within the what they call the Eggside buffer, which is a 1.5 mile buffer. It sits exactly 0.6 miles away from the Eggside plant. So all of that area is considered poisoned land. There's lead and arsenic on it. So you would think that that alone would be a reason why the elected officials would have a sense of urgency around protecting families who are already disproportionately exposed to chemicals and poisoned land, lead, arsenic, the whole nine. Things that we actually don't even know, all of the things that were being exposed in Eggside. Those are the only ones that they admitted to. And so the land itself is poisoned. It sits in here. And even though the governor, Governor Newsom, authorized or called for a state of emergency the Saturday after the fire happened, the way that the officials responded to the fire, simple things like not having masks when they have press conferences, they signaled to everybody that things were okay. And at one point, one of the officials said that the air was clean and safe, right? So I think the ramifications of that, I feel it's like master gaslighting. It's master deception of telling people that things are okay when really things were not okay. And so I think a lot of the residents have felt failed by elected officials, either in the county and the city and up and down the state at all levels. I think people feel deceived. I think people feel there's a term in English, in Spanish, that says, you know, they feel forgotten. One of the gentlemen said, estamos olvidados, that they've forgotten about us. Mm-hmm. It's a very powerful feeling. And we have, we started organizing the acronym is now PLAN, but we started organizing with friends and neighbors impacted because we saw the lack of real urgency. I mean, the fact that people were telling us to stay in our homes when those homes were making us sick. I can speak for myself, my own lived experience. My daughter and I, on Saturday after the fire, fourth day in, I had tremendous headaches. My daughter did too. And at one moment, I lost my sight. And that really freaked me out. And I was like, we are not safe. We need to get out of here. So we went to the American Red Cross just to get oxygen and see what kind of help we might be able to get there. We were at the Red Cross, and that's when I realized, no, this is much more serious than they're making it out to be. We need to get out of here. So we evacuated Sunday morning. We came back and got our things and left to San Diego to get air, to go get medical care. And while I was in San Diego is when the doctors there asked me what I had been exposed to. And I couldn't tell them what we had been exposed to because nobody would tell us the truth. And then the doctors called poison control. And that was the first time that it hit me that we had been poisoned. Mm-hmm. So it's been just a real nightmare for us under the plume path. And you can imagine for people who live next door to the facility, who have to smell those toxic gases and experience the toxic gases without a sense of urgency from the elected officials, it's been awful. People have reported nausea, severe headaches, bloody noses that have not stopped since ignition, diarrhea. They can't eat. They can't keep anything down. So there's also, people who've had pre-existing health issues like upper respiratory problems. They can't breathe. You have people who are diabetic, whose blood sugar levels are through the roof. People who have cardiac issues or heart issues. They've been unwell. I mean, it's a massive, massive problem. And I can't help but think that because these are working class Latinos, that people feel it's okay to not talk about them, and that elected officials and appointed officials feel a certain disregard for this community. And it's just really been awful to witness because we're living it in real time.
Well, I don't blame you for feeling that way. It certainly looks that way, doesn't it? Sadly and inexcusably so. I wonder, the Protect LA Now, the Protect LA Now campaign has stressed, and I think this is an important factor to get out, that this fire hasn't only impacted Boyle Heights, it impacts, well, Monterey Park, Montebello, Commerce, Huntington Park, Cudahy, Maywood, you know, hundreds of thousands of people. Tell us about these communities, the demographics and the physical environment. Why do you think this wider impact hasn't gotten more attention? And what specifically is Protect LA Now calling for?
Yeah, Jim, this is, it baffles us about how it hasn't gotten more attention. We have been the first ones talking about the regional impact. You know, under Christie's leadership with unincorporated East LA, they have been raising the flag around the needs of East LA. We have worked with a variety of different organizations based in the Southeast cities. That's like Huntington Park, Maywood, unincorporated Walnut Park, where the air also went and has made people sick. We've been in communication with clinics out there that have also talked about how people have gone in with the same symptoms that people in Boyle Heights and East LA have had, even though they're a little bit further out. So the initial radius that we were talking about, that the officials were talking about, was 2.5 miles. We pushed their thinking to actually talk about at least a 5-mile radius. And that includes those cities that you referenced. It includes Commerce, which is to the east, literally on the other side of the freeway, the 710 freeway. Montebello, which is a little bit more to the northeast, if you will. And then Monterey Park, which is a little further northeast. It's also impacted the communities of El Sereno, which is, behind City Terrace, which is unincorporated East LA. It's really had a huge regional impact. And I'm sure for your listeners who live in other parts of the basin, I'm sure they've smelled it too. So you can imagine the consistent pollution that's happened and the consistent gaslighting that's followed. They're all saying, you can't, this is not true. Or we're going to ignore the request as a means of trying to ignore the reality. And we're saying that's not enough. That's not okay.
Yeah. Wow.
Well, if you're just tuning in, I'm Maria Hall here with my co-host, Jim Lafferty, and we're speaking with Alma Marquez and Christy Hernandez and Alma Marquez. I didn't want to switch your names, about that Boyle Heights fire that happened a few weeks ago and the environmental injustices in LA that have been around for decades. It is really exposing that. And of course, I do want to put in a pitch for KPFK since it's fund drive time. This is, as you were speaking, Alma, I was just thinking like, yes, we are all in real time. We saw it, we smelled it, and yet the elected officials are acting like it's nothing. So that's why it's so important that we get the voices like you and Christy today to actually reinforce what we've seen and smelled and heard with our senses rather than what the media and elected officials are saying. But speaking of government officials.
I was just going to say that to emphasize the point that you just made, that it's one of the points that I kind of make often when we're having a fund drive here at KPFK, the lack of attention to this problem. Oh, sure, at first it's in the paper and what have you, but the continuing, the lack of continuing attention to it, and more important, an honesty in responding to it, and in doing the damn things that need to be done, which we'll get into that haven't been done, is so appalling. And it's one of the reasons why this station is so important, frankly, because we're giving over our whole hour today, really, to this topic, because it's worthy of hours for that matter. This station really operates in many ways as the voice piece for the progressive community in Los Angeles, for people like those that are fighting the effects of this horrendous fire in Boyle Heights and the surrounding community, that are speaking up and organizing on behalf of hundreds of thousands of people. Their voice is getting out here on KPFK. Well, it can only happen so long as we can pay the rent, my friends. I mean, we may think of ourselves as special, and we are in the radio world today, but the electricity company doesn't think we're special. The people who work for us, who earn half of what they could earn somewhere else, have to be paid, and so on and so forth. So really, friends, now is the time to pick up the phone and say thank you for that, and be part of the movement, really, here in LA. When you do that, you really are, it's all one. And that number, of course, has been given out many times. We give it out again. It's 818-985-5735. 818-985-5735. Let me just mention, we'll mention during the show some other ways we thank you as well. But in particular, if you call in with a $100 donation, you get Tom Hartman's book, Who Killed the American Dream? The Greatest Political Crime Ever Told. It's an amazing book. I'll tell you more about it later in the show. It's for a pledge of $100. Who Killed the American Dream? The Greatest Political Crime Ever Told. It's quite a book from quite a guy, Tom Hartman. And so give us a call for that. But maybe you just want to call and get a T-shirt for $65 or a grocery bag for, $65. That's fine. You can do that, too. Well, let's get back before our station break to the topic at hand. And I know what is your next question that you want
to ask? Sure. Yes, I do have another question. I was trying to get my, you can go to kpfk.org, by the way, and then go to the summer fund drive. But I was trying to get my pledge in really fast before. But it's okay. I'll do it at the station ID break.
Okay.
So I wanted to talk about the elected officials. Now, I assume hopefully there have been some, or at least one, sort of being cooperative and championing the rights of the people. But I am wondering if you can give us just a rundown of, you know, who has been responding, not only elected officials, but also the agencies. LA is very complicated in the jurisdictions and who handles what and air quality and other environmental. So can you give us just like the nutshell version, who's in charge of what and who's been kind of leading the charge?
Yeah, I'll jump in here because I think there's something that we need to make clear is that right now it's being referred to as the Boyle Heights fire, but I want to be clear that this is the Lineage Warehouse toxic fire. Because while it was located in Boyle Heights, the wind was blowing east. So the community that was hit hardest and initially was unincorporated East Los Angeles. And I say unincorporated because What it means to be unincorporated is that we're not a city. Unincorporated, and whether we have over 120 unincorporated communities in LA County, and that means we don't have a city council, it means we don't have a mayor, we don't have a city hall, we don't have an annual budget. So when we as unincorporated communities want to go to our local elected official, geographically speaking, it's our LA County Board of Supervisors. So our city hall is going to LA County Board of Supervisors. So we have to drive into downtown, pay for parking, wait hours until we can give our 1 minute comment. And so I think that's really important to share, because when we're talking about how folks are experiencing this disaster, this emergency, is the resources and how they're allocated. And so when you asked earlier about how folks are experiencing this, I think there's two ways to describe it. One is how their jurisdiction, like how they're experiencing it through their government elected officials, and how they're experiencing on day-to-day, in the day-to-day. So when you talk about elected officials, when we're talking about Boyle Heights, they are under the jurisdiction of the city of Los Angeles. And they have a mayor, which is Mayor Karen Bass. They have a city council member given one of the 15 districts in the city of Los Angeles. In this case, it is council member Isabel Jurado. Now, if you cross the street back into unincorporated East Los Angeles, our most local elected official, Karen Bass, does not represent unincorporated East Los Angeles. It's Supervisor Hilda Solis. And so there are 10 million people in LA County, and there are five LA County Board of Supervisors. So each supervisor represents 2 million people. Unincorporated East Los Angeles is made up of 120,000 residents, and it is the largest unincorporated community, not only in LA County, but in the state of California and in the nation. So it is twice the size of Montebello and Monterey Park, respectively, each 60,000 residents. And I want to paint that picture for you because, again, this is a large community, and we are asking for elected officials to step up. And that's just the first layer of our local city, county government. Then we have the second layer of our state local elected officials, our assembly members and our senators, and then our member of Congress. Now, at the very bottom of this, like local city, is what I in county representation is what I just shared. We do have two separate assembly members. So on the Boyle Heights side, it's assembly member Mark Gonzalez, and then East LA is assembly member Jessica Coloza. We both share the same senator, which is Senator Maria Elena Durazo, and then the same member of Congress, which is Congressmember Jimmy Gomez. But what's happening is that we're being told, when we ask Governor Newsom to please step in, if you have designated this as a state of emergency, we're asking you to also evacuate. He told us, no, go back down to your local jurisdiction. And so that's why we're here, is we're asking for our local electeds to work together to act with the urgency that any state of emergency should be addressed. And that is currently not happening. And so when you asked about how residents are experiencing this, I want to share a little bit more, because we're in the, you know, in summer, this is a heat wave this week. Folks are in a home where they have to have their doors and their windows closed. The majority of these homes, including mine, do not have an AC. So we are talking about folks who need to find out a way to have an AC, whether that's a portable AC, that still you need to open your window. When there was smoke, some of these, you know, folks are renting, or you know what, there was a cracked window or a door that didn't close completely. So smoke was still coming in the homes. Folks are saying it's so hot and stuffy, they don't want to cook because it's so hot and stuffy. Why would they turn on the oven? And even if they wanted to eat, they don't even have the appetite. They're nauseous. And as Alma mentioned, right, the headaches, the nosebleeds, just not feeling well, the stomach aches. And now we're talking about an infestation of rats and flies and maggots. No one deserves to live that way. And this is something that the residents did not cause. They did not cause. They didn't ask for this warehouse to come, for this fire to take place. And now they are living with the aftermath of that. And that's what we're saying is not fair. And while we know that some folks don't want to evacuate because they don't know what that means, these are seniors, we're saying is expedite and make sure this waste is removed in a timely manner, because 85 million pounds of food is a lot. And these neighbors are the ones that are smelling it and are seeing it. So that is the way that I see this. But we're also talking about the children, right? They're on summer vacation right now. They canceled the 4th of July shows. They closed the local pools. So what kind of summer is it for these children? Now, according to the timeline, they're supposed to clear everything out by August 14th, more or less, which is 2 days after kids go back to school.
Uh-huh.
So we're also so when you ask about elected officials, we're also wanting to call on LAUSD. What are you doing for our children? And that would be LAUSD board member Rocio Rivas is our local representative. So to give you an idea here of what we're working with.
Just to be clear, because I'm disgusted by it, if I've understood correctly what you've said, just to be clear, mm-hmm. after all of these weeks, these various governmental units, which have some responsibility for various aspects of various geographic areas of the fire area, have not formed a joint committee of some sort and meets regularly? In other words, there isn't somebody from the Board of Supervisors, from the city councils, from the state legislature, from the governor's office that sit down at our meeting and addressing these problems on a daily basis in a collective way?
That's a great question that we're aware of. No. The only office that we know right now, Isabel Jurado, council member, has invited Lineage to come in, and they host, from my understanding, weekly meetings with Lineage and some of the local stakeholders who have also helped with nonprofits. We always say community showing up for community, who have coalesced, who have come to support mostly the immediate needs were the air purifiers, the food, and the water. That's the only entity that we know of. Now, if they're meeting, behind closed doors, maybe, but as far as we know of, and that's what we're asking, interagency collaboration, all levels of government should be coming together to address this. Everybody was looking at the immediate, needs, the air purifiers, again, the water, the food, but we're saying we need to think long-term now, right? Why do these warehouses and these types of hazardous situations keep coming to the same communities, the working class communities, predominantly Latino or, communities or immigrant communities or communities of color? And so we're saying, pay for or help subsidize our electrical bills. We've asked for that because air purifiers are running day in, day out. And they actually, we had someone say that their bill is $600.
I don't doubt it.
Because they have four air purifiers.
I don't doubt it.
And I just want to share this because there is no real assistance. It's actually a payment plan. So, and then you have the Edison versus Department of Water and Power. So you have different folks servicing different areas. So that's where we're also getting caught up. So to answer your question, Jim, we would imagine and hope they would be working together because
yes.
you have different departments and jurisdictions and government and agencies and local and state and federal.
I think what they'll say, Jim, just to be fair, is that they have an incident command. They'll say that there's a group of people who are convening and, with different members of departments. But the reality is that the local feedbacks, I'll give you an example of something that happened.
Hold that thought, if you would, just because by law, we've got to take a station ID break.
Let's
take a few seconds and then we'll get right back to you. Let's take an ID break now. I'll be right back with you.
It's Lupe. I listen to you guys every morning, and I've been listening to you guys since I was 19 years old. I listen to Democracy Now! And the one in the afternoon, I always forget. Background briefing. There you go. Yeah, that
one. All right, Lupe.
I'm Andrew Tonkovich, host of Bibliocracy, KPFK's weekly literary arts program. Listeners value this station's commitments to news and analysis, our shared political struggles, and celebrating the arts. Support my books program and this station, a singular community media resource, during our fund drive by calling to donate at 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK, or hit the donate button at kpfk.org. Thank you.
This is Chris Hedges, and you're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM, heard globally at kpfk.org.
And at the moment, you're listening to the Lawyers Guild Show here on KPFK. I'm Jim Lafferty, along with my co-host, Maria Hall. We're discussing, weeks after the fact now, the continuing fallout, the damning fallout from the Boyle Heights fire. with a couple of activists who have been doing what they can to call the world's attention to it and to get some relief for the hundreds of thousands of people still affected on a daily basis by that fire. Maria, I guess the next question is mine. But we're going to go back to Alma for a moment, because Alma, you were in the middle of clarifying something for us.
Yeah, I think that, you know, to be fair to the question of, is there some unified coordination? You know, there is, or was, to our knowledge, an incident response command or incident command, where they bring different representatives from the county, certainly I think the city, and I understand from some of the government agencies, including some of the state government agencies. Our response to that has been that there's been little to no engagement for people outside of the city of LA. So as an example, unincorporated East LA residents have not been engaged in those conversations. Southeast LA cities have not been engaged in those conversations. You know, there was in the city of Maywood, for example, City of Maywood, City of Cudahy, City of Commerce, elected officials there were not warned about what was really happening. They were not told how they should prepare. And so if they're relying on the county communications infrastructure or this incident command infrastructure, and they're not being told how to protect their citizens, that's an epic failure. And that is 100% what's happened. So, there's enough blame to go around in terms of the communications response. And, you know, we have been very proactive about not just blaming people, but actually coming up with solutions. And we've reached out to the county supervisors with our ideas and our requests. We've reached out to the county health officer, who by law is the person who could. And, you know, we can cite the codes, and you all are lawyers, so you know that there's legal precedence for this, mm-hmm. that the county health officers have both the legal responsibility, and as the person who is a medical doctor, on the highest ranking medical doctor in the county, that he, in this case, Dr. Davis, has the authority given to him by the state of California to call a mandatory evacuation order. A mandatory evacuation order would do several things. And so this is why we've been asking for it immediately. They should have done this the moment that toxic fire started on June 17th. They should have said, everybody, leave. If you can leave, leave. And if you can't leave, let's help you get out. Instead, they said shelter in place. So you have all of these people, including our family, who's sheltered in place, and who, unbeknownst to them, were being continuously exposed to all of the chemicals in those solar panels, all of the chemicals in the building, all of the chemicals and gases that the solar panels, the buildings, think about it, the paint, the cement, the things that were the ammonia, because we have proof that there was ammonia. There were actually, we've had people send us pictures and videos that there was a yellow smoke. Regular fires are not that dark, one, they're not that black, and they're certainly not yellow. So we know that we were all exposed to ammonia. And yet, again, this idea that that it wasn't that serious was something that that caused us a lot of concerns. It's literally like every layer of chemical that we've been exposed to, they've been absolutely not transparent about what we've been exposed to. And I want to share with you the five things that we asked them for in a letter to both the supervisors as well as the county health officer. And I'll tell you a little bit about what we asked the governor to help us with. So the first thing that we asked for was this mandatory evacuation order. And why? And you all know, again, your listeners know that we have to be careful with these corporations. We know that corporations are not standing in solidarity of support for everyday people. Lineage is certainly not doing that, and neither will the far, like the different insurance agencies. The different insurance companies are not going to be rushing in to help support the families with the most needs here. And we're talking, again, working class and barely middle class families who've been impacted, right? So we have the mandatory evacuation order is necessary by state law for families to be able to access their homeowners insurance to qualify for something called ALE. That's alternative living expenses. Without a mandatory evacuation order, that becomes off the table. You cannot access that. So what does this mean? This means that people who are victims of this fire cannot access their own homeowners insurance because there's no mandatory evacuation order in place. It is, I mean, unbelievable. So we asked the county to issue the mandatory evacuation order and get people out of harm's way, allowing them to be able to access their homeowners insurance policies that they've already paid for. Right now, they're not eligible for it. So we've asked for the mandatory evacuation order. We also asked them to retroactively identify these homes as uninhabitable. Why? Because all of those homes are chemically, basically penetrated, and they haven't been assessed for livability. But because they're under this incredible cocktail of toxins and chemicals and gases, we know that they're polluted. We just don't know how bad. So people don't even know how to clean, they're living in these homes. Many of them believe that they're okay because they've been told that they're okay. So our group has said, go back to June 17th so that then they can access those insurance policies to be able to clean up their own homes and not be at the mercy of Lineage Corporation and their lawyers who are going to say, no, you're not eligible because the law protects us. So that's the second thing that we've asked for. The third thing that we've asked for is independent monitoring. And why is that important? Obviously, we can't trust these same organizations that have made us sick to tell us how they made us sick. They're not telling us, and we deserve to know. So independent monitoring about chemicals, the lead-aware content, especially like we said, because this is in an Ixide-poisoned community, we want to make sure that we know what information we should be telling our doctors. If we don't know what we've been exposed to, how can doctors help us? I mean, it's a very basic need and request. So we want them to tell us a full chemical accounting. That is the fourth request is a full accounting of what we've been exposed to so that we could then have that as common information we can share with the public. And then we've also asked for expert medical guidance. Like I told you, I had to go to San Diego, and in San Diego is when they told me that I was poisoned. I was telling them I've been poisoned for the last 5 days. I don't know what is in there. So we need independent expert guidance that we can get from all over the country, from experts all over the country. And we want to make sure that it's not just, you know, a bureaucratic spokesperson who's giving this guidance, but that's actually research-based, scientifically proven information that we can then trust to share with the community. So those are our demands. I'm happy to share with you the letter and response we got from the chief health officer 2 weeks ago now. And that basically was saying, you know, we're asking Lineage to provide this. In essence, they've asked Lineage to take over public health and public safety, and that is unacceptable. And so we need an adult in the room. We've been asking for an adult in the room, and people are angry. We need allies to stand with us because in many ways, they're being very dismissive because we're Latino and because, you know, we are asking for very common sense things, and they've been totally trivializing our requests. So as we're thinking about the greater LA community, we really need support. We really need solidarity. We need to build public and political pressure at the local level and at the state level. We reached out. Today actually is 1 week since we reached out to Governor Newsom, asking him to please come and take up his state of emergency, which he saw, but take up the charge to actually declare this a disaster zone, which would unlock additional resources. We are simply asking for the same resources that our neighbors in Altadena, in the Porter Ranch incident, got, unlocking mortgage forbearance, unlocking renter protection, and economic bridge loans. Specifically, we'd love to have the bridge grants, which the others had, but to help the businesses here stay in business. These businesses are going to close. And yes, we've been, you know, holding, like literally saying, who wants to come to a stinky place where all these chemical compounds are being, released? So we just want the same. We want equity. And the only thing that's been different is our zip code.
And by the way, I know we are just about out of time for this because we do need to leave some time to talk some business here with our audience. But Lineage hired a lobbying firm with City Hall connections to manage their crisis response. Have they taken any action yet to help anybody?
Christy, you want to answer that?
Based on the meeting that I was involved, I attended on Monday, the Lineage representative shared that they have gone out to canvass 633 homes in the near vicinity, of which 603, there was some response. And they were able to offer, again, they were providing either air purifiers, air conditioning units, portable water and masks and food, and a grocery voucher.
But what about cleaning up the poisons in the houses?
Yeah, great question. And that's the other thing too that we've been asking for. As Alma shared, we also want that to be part of it. I'm like, are you testing, you know, the air, the ash, the dirt? Are you cleaning the homes? Are you cleaning inside the homes? I had one couple who, she's a cancer survivor, and her husband also had a cardiovascular disease. And she said, Christy, when we clean the windowsills from the dirt, it's like grease. It is so thick to clean off of our windows. And so I think what's happening right now is that the elected officials are saying, your name is on that building. You are responsible. You go in and you are, you know, to help with all these items and resources. So you're flipping the bill. But again, Altus is nowhere to be found because they're the ones who actually caught fire. So I think the fact that you're having the same entity who is a culprit here having to go in, I mean, are they going to really be doing their due diligence? And so what we've also been saying, that's just literally in the vicinity. We're saying a mile within a mile radius, you need to go out to a mile radius. And one of the other local nonprofits said there, they had someone do the mapping, and there are roughly within that mile radius, about 6,700 homes, 6,700. And so they're telling us that they have canvassed 633. So that's to just give you perspective on their reach. And so I think bottom line is that this is a large community. This is a dense community. This is what happens when you continue to build, you know, more housing and dense housing apartments. And then you bring in a warehouse right in the middle of this neighborhood. And so we're not thinking about when we're having an emergency of this kind, like what is going to be needed to address it. And this fire didn't cause this. This fire exposed the fact that our leadership is not prepared, or that our government isn't prepared in the same way that we would think for any emergency preparedness, right? The accountability, the lack of accountability, the transparency, the emergency preparedness. So that's what I think of. And that's what we were told in this last meeting from one of the Lineage representatives, 633 homes.
Well, we're going to continue to follow this story.
I have one quick last question.
Yeah, because then we really
close, Jim. Yes, I just wanted to mention the one about, I read in Capital in Maine that they did have another fire in 2024, Lineage did in Washington.
That's right.
That burned for 60 days, and they later reported a $107 million net insurance gain. So they actually made money off of it. What do you have to say about that? very briefly.
Over there, there was 250, we've studied this, 250,000 people were exposed. Here, we're saying at least 750,000 people.
Wow.
At least. And we're talking about real exposure, right? Not secondhand exposure, real exposure. Over there was a rural community. Here, obviously, we're in the urban core. But a lot of the symptoms that people experienced over there, people are experiencing now, which is why we need the mandatory evacuation order with upfront expenses paid by the county. The county can go back and, just as they have against Edison, against other corporations, to get their money back. But we need an immediate evacuation, a mandatory evacuation, to get people out of harm's way. People died over there. Animals died. And we already know that animals are sick in this area. We had the day before yesterday, one of our members told us that her cat already has hair coming off. So the most vulnerable are the pets. Those are the first ones to show us that they're sick.
Yeah.
The others are going to continue to get sick, and we need to stop this now. And so we need your support and appreciate, you know, giving us this platform, to both of you. Thank you.
We'll continue to follow up on it. And this is a developing story. So we want to thank you both so much for being with us today.
Thank you for the opportunity. And I really want to emphasize how folks are getting sick. I still have a dry cough. Yeah. After, you know, it's been weeks after, but that's just very minimal. So I really want to underscore again, we need to know what we've been exposed to. But thank you for the opportunity, for the platform, and for your allyship on this. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. Well, we'll stick with it. And thank you so much for joining us today and bringing the start of this story to us. And we'll follow the story with you.
Yes. And and where can people learn more?
Yeah.
Our website is protectlanow.com. protectlanow.com. And just to remember it, it's plan, P-L-A-N. We need a plan.
Yeah.
And also, we're having a vigil today and a teach-in at 6 p.m. at Resurrection Church. We invite you to come. If you have been impacted, if you're, you know, have been in any way, whether you live near the site or the smoke plume path, and or if you're an ally, we welcome you. I mean, this is a community effort, and we keep saying this. Community keeps, you know, showing up for community. And we really want to also make sure our elected officials are with us. But thank you. And we look forward to seeing you this evening if you're available.
And that's what place this evening?
It's at Resurrection Church on Opal Street in Boyle Heights.
We'll be
having at
6 p.m.
6 p.m.
Yeah, 6 p.m. Yeah, it's on the corner. It's near Opal and Lorena in Boyle Heights.
All right.
It's a historic church there, so we look forward to seeing you there.
Get out there, folks, and see that we see what you can do and find out the latest going in and join in the fight. All right.
Thank you so much to our guests, Alma Marquez and Christy Hernandez.
Yes. All right. Well, friends, today's show is an example of why you need to support KPFK. Our own government is not supporting these people. Certainly this corporation is not supporting these people. We need to have the news about this continue to get out. We need to follow this story, not just for the first couple of days when the fire is actually, you know, flaming away, but the weeks that follow, when the harm is being done, when the sicknesses are piling up, when the deaths are piling up for the people who live there, when the harm is piling up. We need to follow the story, continue it. And we're going to promise you we'll do that here on the Lawyers Guild show. Do you want to, let me just tell you again very quickly. We would hope that somebody out there, of course, is going to pledge $25 a month. You pledge $25 a month, you're kind of like a sustainer to KPFK. You're in a special category of people, and we really need more and more people to do that. It's just $25 a month. That's probably what you pay for any number of subscriptions, your streaming services, and God knows what else you pay all this money for these days. But pay that $25 a month if you can afford to do so, please, my friends. And you pledge that to KPFK. You call us at 818-985-5735. Also, for $65, you can get a KPFK logo t-shirt. You can get a logo mug with the KPFK logo on it for $65 as well. Get a great grocery bag that holds a lot of groceries. I've seen them for $50. So there are all sorts of ways, all sorts of financial levels you can support us. I'm going to pledge now to get the amazing book, which we haven't talked about yet in the show. It's available only to the Lawyers Guild. We only have about 10 of them left in the station now. It's a book by Alex Karakatsanis. I hope I pronounced it right. Karakatsanis.
And the Karakatsanis.
Karakatsanis. And the name of the book is Copaganda. It's how the police and the media manipulate our news. It's from a prize-winning civil rights lawyer. It's a powerful warning about how the media manipulates public perception, how it fuels fear and inequality while distracting us from what truly matters. I say there are just 10 copies available for $100. One of those copies can be yours. You can share it with your friends. You can use it to organize a little neighborhood teach-in.
Yes.
Maybe your union would want to do that. Maybe your church would want to do that.
It's a great book. Yes. And full disclosure, I work with Alec on another project. So I'll get it autographed for you.
Oh, well, there you go.
$100. It's a great book. Yeah, it's so good. And it's a basically a case study of Los Angeles. He's not from Los Angeles, but he came in and did all this research on the LAPD and how many media relations people they have and how they hand the major news stations their, you know, everything on a silver platter. The footage, the script, everything. It's such a good book. But yes, we have just a couple more minutes to help you remember why you love KPFK so much. And every time I come on here, I remember why, especially hearing our guests today who are their community members of Boyle Heights and unincorporated LA and Montebello, Monterey Park. I mean, all of this, you know, LA, who are community members who are all impacted by, again, this environmental injustice and what is happening on the major news stations. Basically nothing. And here they are demanding, you know, some kind of accountability. And then we actually are able to give them a microphone and speak to you directly. So we are sorely missing that in our world right now. And, you know, just because we can't, you know, spend so much money putting it on a 30-second forum, you know, we just hope that you'll continue to support us. And you can go to kpfk.org and just go to the yellow box that says Summer Fund Drive. And under there, you can choose either a one-time gift or your monthly gift. And then just make sure that if you do want one of those premiums, just check the box that says yes, and then the drop-down menu comes down.
All right. That's wonderful news to know. Yes. And the phone number again is 818-985-5735, or go to the website. More traditional gifts. We have the amazing complete set in this case. It's a 2-CD set of Tony Bennett and Bill Evans. I mean, that's an amazing CD offer. That's for $80. And we just have Tony Bennett's Greatest Hits, just. Bennett's Greatest Hits for $65. So there's all sorts of ways in which we say thank you. We like to think that the programming we bring you, not simply on the Lawyers Guild Show. And by the way, when you make your pledge, please do mention the Lawyers Guild Show. We like to get the credit for it, if credit we deserve it. So
we
please
get brownie points.
We get brownie points.
Trying to do our part. We volunteer, but we also really, really believe in this station. I mean, that's why we do it. We believe in this station and independent media.
Absolutely, absolutely. So do be generous, my friends. Perhaps you want to be one of those $25 a month going ongoing sustainers. That would be great. Perhaps you just want the T-shirt or the mug. That's okay. Carry it proudly and announce KPFK. Get your friends to listen. And if you do make those pledges, mention the Lawyers Guild Show, if you would. Again, 818-985-5735. 818-985-3750. I'm going daffy saying the number. Or go to our website, if you will. You can get the Tony Bennett thing. You can get the Tom Hartman book for $100. You can get the Copaganda book for $100. You get the T-shirts. Oh, my God, the mugs. You get Bob Dylan's. By the way, if you don't yet have it, a lot of people do and a lot of people don't. The Blonde on Blonde 2-LP set of Bob Dylan music, that's $120. Just endless ways that we say thank you, in addition to bringing you this kind of cutting-edge program week after week, day after day. Well, that's our music, my friends. You can still call, but we've got to say goodbye to you until next week. So on behalf of Maria Hall and myself, Jim Lafferty, we thank you for listening to the Lawyers Guild Show today. I urge you to pledge. And in the meanwhile, While you're pledging, also remember to stand up for your rights, my friends. Keep demonstrating in the streets when needed.
Yes.
Hello, I'm Ian Masters, the host of Background Briefing, available 24/7 at backgroundbriefing.org and heard on KPFK Mondays through Thursdays at 5 p.m. and on Sundays at 11 a.m. Background Briefing looks into three or four of the important stories and issues of the day to provide an in-depth daily briefing with context, history, and insight from the best-informed guests closest to the scene who offer analysis and details often overlooked by the soundbite-driven media.